Yeah, I get it. And I can get a new arm grown when we get home.
Ivan was silent for a few seconds, staring at his hand, slowly turning it.
Okay. Do it before I chicken out.
Charles Kemp looked down at the notes, charts, and images arrayed on his active desktop. He pushed the items around, but no alternate arrangement magically cast the data into a sane explanation. Kemp blew out a hard breath and pushed the intercom.
Captain, please. Astra.
A moment later, the captain's voice came from the intercom.
You have a report, Doctor?
Yes, sir. Lots of data, not a lot of explanations, though there's a very organized interface between the biological and artificial parts of the arm. As I expected, the blood vessels end at that interface, but interestingly, they aren't just tied off. The arteries and veins have been specifically tied together so that blood flow is unimpeded. Nerve interfaces are organized and efficient, including, I might add, parasympathetic functions.
Kemp dragged a particular report toward himself with a finger.
Chief McNeil said he would give you a full report on his findings, but in summary, the arm isn't a monolithic piece of metal. There's complex structure in there, sufficient to provide a working appendage. The substance of the appendage consists of countless, for want of a better word, nanites linked together to form a continuous whole. Like cells, but somewhat smaller, and made of metal.
Kemp's voice ran down, and he stared blankly at the documents on his desk until the captain said,
Doctor?
Sorry. We amputated, just below the elbow. Pritchard gave his consent. He agreed that getting a new one grown was a small price to pay, no pun intended. We've placed the amputated limb in a sealed sample container for examination by experts on Earth, assuming there are experts on something like this.
Are you sure that's safe?
I'm not sure of anything, Captain. But in terms of risks, I think the damage is done. If it's inclined to spread in some way, well, it's already here. And sample containers are pretty tough. They have to be.
Kemp hesitated.
I think we need to understand this thing, and that means handing it over for analysis. If we toss it out the airlock, someone else will just have to come back and get it, wasting more time.
Thank you, Doctor. I don't necessarily disagree. I'll await the Chief's, no doubt, much more opaque report, and I will let you know if I understand any of it. Out.
Kemp leaned back in his office chair.
Holy crapola, what a day.
13. Situation analysis. Captain Jennings leaned back with his coffee and looked around the table at his bridge staff. Aiello, Mikorowski, and Gennaris sat with their elbows on the table, gazing into their coffees as if attempting to scry with a crystal ball. McNeil, on the other hand, was staring into space. A slight frown on his face. Typical of the man, he saw it only as another engineering problem.
Opinions?
McNeil sat forward and waved his arm in front of his face.
I wish we'd thought to save the suit arm. I would like to examine the substance.
The crew left it on Baby Rock, partly buried. Heads up thinking on their part, didn't want it drifting around and settling against the ship's hull.
Aiello looked momentarily alarmed at the thought.
Or just as important, settling onto the big rock and contaminating our find.
All heads nodded around the table. An untouchable strike would go from a value of tens of billions to zero.
On that subject, Gennaris added, has Cirilla finished with the assay?
Still working, Captain Jennings said. But so far, everything is proving out at greater than expected quantities. She's starting to throw around numbers that make my earlier speech look like the height of pessimism.
This revelation brought smiles around the table. A satisfied silence settled over the room as people sipped their coffees.
I'm probably being silly,
Gennaris finally said in a deliberately offhand tone. All heads turned to her.
What is it, Lita?
Asked the captain.
I'm sure I'm just being paranoid, but the baby rock is only a couple hundred meters from the big rock. Are we inviting trouble by leaving it there?
You want to move it?
Jennings looked at McNeil.
Can we?
There are several different ways we could do it. The easiest would be to attach a couple of Reva units. They're designed to stop rotation on a big rock. They can certainly be used to move a small one. It'll require careful control, though. And if we accelerate too hard, the chute arm could just fall off the rock, given the minuscule gravity.
And we should put a fail beacon on it, Mikorosky added, and alert the military to the danger.
Not sure about that, Aiello said quickly. If military command gets too paranoid, they could interdict Big Rock as well.
Captain Jennings sighed and closed his eyes for a moment. Not reporting the danger would be gross negligence. Losing the claim would be devastating for the entire crew. He opened his eyes and scanned the faces around the table.
We have to report the danger. We can't not do so. But we don't have to create an association between the two. No one will go near this area until after the next lottery. And then it'll be like the California gold rush.
Aiello looked around the table.
Everyone that can float a boat will be flying out to this sector looking for another rock like ours.
Right. Captain Jennings rubbed his face in thought.
Let's get the paperwork done on the claim. The sooner that gets finalized, the sooner we can start getting bids from the mega cores. Meanwhile, McNeil, please put together a plan to get the baby rock out of the area with the suit arm and the anomaly on it. We'll wait a week or two and report it as a separate incident.
Jennings knew what they were doing wasn't strictly illegal, but it was a distortion of basic moral principles. He realized with a heavy heart that even he was not immune to normal human failings. 14. Adverse reaction.
A metal arm. A freaking metal arm.
Ten seemed to be stuck in a loop. This was the fourth time he'd said it. Even to other people, just as much in shock, it was getting old. Seth tried to keep his face neutral, although the urge to roll his eyes was close to overpowering.
How did it replace his arm?
Will asked. Willoughby Todd, the crew's amateur artist in residence, was sketching arms and hands as they discussed the situation. Seth had to admit the sketches were damn good.
Could it be something sent up here by the Sino-Soviets?
Aspasia asked.
Come on, Spazzy, Lorenza countered. They don't have that kind of tech. They aren't even at our level. I've been to enough trade shows and conferences on automation to know they're the buyers, not the innovators.
Seth nodded silently. As the crew's mining robot operator and general remote automation expert, anything Lorenza said on the subject could be taken as gospel.
And why would they go to all that trouble to set up a booby trap for a mining ship?
Seth looked around the table. No one had an answer to that. Seth noted Geiger examining his fingertips closely.
Worried that you caught it, Katie?
It's not impossible.
It got through Ivan's suit. It could have gotten through mine. I don't know that I touched the gunk, but I don't know that I didn't.
But there's no reason to believe it would take any longer for any of us, Seth replied.
And I don't see anything different about you.
Still ugly,
Aspasia added.
A metal freaking arm,
Ten said into the air. Raoul reached over and punched Ten, hard, in the shoulder.
Get a grip, asshole!
Ten yelped and glared at Raoul, but the move seemed to have accomplished its goal.
Well, regardless, Aspasia said. The chief has a plan to move the baby rock, and he'll be assigning tasks. I'm looking forward to being a billionaire, thank you, and some stupid alien booby trap isn't going to get in the way.
Katie and Seth responded at the same time.
Billionaire? Alien?
Aspasia glared at Seth.
Alien is just a placeholder for damned if I know who did it. But it's as good an explanation as any.
Then she speared Katie with her gaze.
And have you not looked at Cirilla's latest report? This is the biggest find in 50 years. We aren't just retired, dummy. We're now the ultra-rich.
Ten, apparently now recovered, piped up.
Albert told me the captain has done the filings, and we've got preliminary confirmation and a couple of inquiries from interested parties.
Ten made air quotes around the last two words, which brought smiles to everyone. Seth scrubbed his face with his hands. He wasn't sure how Ivan would react when he awoke. Even with the prospect of a new arm back on Earth, an amputation was still traumatic. Seth resolved to do something to cheer Ivan up. It took Chief McNeil very little time to come up with a plan for moving Baby Rock. The ship's engineer called all hands to duty for the operation. Nothing could be left to chance. Any glitches could potentially contaminate Big Rock, and that would be it for their claim. Both he and the captain had made it clear that they wouldn't attempt to cover up such an eventuality. As such, the crew was focused on the chief's plan to an extent seldom before seen. Without prompting, people were doing dry runs, talking through the operation again and again, looking for failure points. Meanwhile, the rocket-impelled vector adjustment units were unpacked and moved over to Baby Rock. With virtually no rotation to deal with, they could skip the more difficult and problem-prone spin-down operation. The crew connected the Rivas to the rock with pitons, then wrapped a net of cables around the rock to provide additional bracing. A Riva ripping out of its mooring during a firing sequence would be disastrous. At best, it would impart a spin to the rock and possibly fling the anomaly and suit arm right off. At worst, it could break up the rock completely. McNeil donned a suit and personally inspected the setup. Seth was present and was careful to keep a straight face. After McNeil had retreated to the ship, Ten tapped Seth's helmet. They turned off their radios and touched helmets in the only truly private way to communicate in space.
Well, now we know why Mr. McNeil doesn't like going EVA,
Ten said, the usual grin evident in his tone. Seth didn't like Ten's attitude generally, but couldn't argue this one.
The word that kept popping up was gnome. I don't think they're specifically Scottish, but...
Ten laughed.
I was leaning more toward troll, but let's go with yours. Skin-tight suits definitely are not going to be his preferred fashion statement.
Seth opened his mouth to reply, but at that moment, the suit intercom buzzed, indicating that they should get back on channel. Seth quickly keyed his control.
Robinson, pay attention, guys.
Aiello's voice came back over the general frequency.
The chief has given his blessing. 2 minutes to activation.
Seth and Ten exchanged silent looks and both jetted off to their assigned posts. At the appointed time, the Riva units all fired simultaneously. They were throttled back to minimum thrust, using multiple units to distribute the strain as much as possible. The activity went on for several minutes, at the end of which Baby Rock was perceptibly moving away from Big Rock. Finally, the Rivas cut off.
Shutdown confirmed. Units are on failsafe.
Aiello intoned.
Crews, collect all equipment. Carefully.
The collection of the Rivas, cables, and pitons would be done with greater than normal care. First, to prevent any obvious marks or damage on the rock, and second, to avoid too much contact between the crew and the equipment. Captain Jennings had ordered the whole mess to be bundled together and sent on a hyperbolic trajectory into deep space. No physical evidence would be left that could tie the Mad Astra to Baby Rock. 15. Deja Vu. Ivan woke up. He could tell he was still in sick bay even before his waking mind put the memories of the last 24 hours back into order. He shuddered. He'd panicked out there on Baby Rock, and he admitted to mild embarrassment about that.
he'd probably find himself the proud owner of a new nickname, way worse than Sprout. Screechy? Babbles? Eek? Or maybe Stubby. As his memory reintegrated, he remembered the metal arm. It hadn't felt different from inside. Just his arm, but made of metal. They'd talked about it, then decided to amputate. Sure, these days you could get a new limb or organ or pretty much anything regrown. Still, for the rest of the trip home, he'd be handicapped. Judy, babe, am I going to have a story to tell you? Ivan hoped the kids wouldn't have to see him with the missing arm. It would freak them out. Well, the doc was right, though. It was a small price to pay. Ivan reached to throw off the covers with his right hand before he remembered that he no longer had a right hand. He sat up abruptly and snapped open his eyes. Dr. Kemp burst through the door, his hair in disarray, and Ivan realized he was screaming. Again. He raised his arm. The right arm. The one that had just been amputated. And wiggled his fingers. Dr. Kemp's eyes goggled. He stepped back slowly and felt for the intercom button without taking his eyes off the arm.
"How is this possible?" Captain Jennings glared at Dr. Kemp. Charlie couldn't really blame him. The whole thing sounded like a sick joke.
"I don't know, sir, but Ivan has a complete right arm. Metal up to the biceps now."
Dr. Kemp shook his head slowly.
"I can't explain this. I can't explain it at all."
"There are a number of issues we have to deal with," said Chief McNeil.
"No shit, Sherlock. What clued you in?"
The thought was unworthy, and Kemp carefully gave no indication of it on his face.
"One," the chief continued, "where is the metal for the new arm coming from? And two, where is the material from the old arm going?"
"Transmutation?" asked Aiello.
"I'd just as soon not go there yet," the chief answered. "Granted, we're out of our depth here technologically, but in the absence of direct evidence, transmutation of elements seems a bit extreme."
Dr. Kemp nodded, then his eyebrows furrowed as a thought occurred to him. He moved to the cot that held a sedated Ivan Pritchard, went down on his knees and looked underneath.
"Uh-huh.
Look here." Dr. Kemp grabbed a surgical glove and used it to push a small quantity of white powder into a pile.
"I bet this is almost all raw calcium. Well, calcium carbonate, anyway. All that's left of the bones of Ivan's arm."
There was an oop sound, and the first mate turned and rushed down the hall, holding his hand over his mouth.
"Okay, that may have been somewhat insensitive of me."
Kemp stood silently, hand on his chin, for several seconds.
"So, other than some trace elements, we're 95% composed of carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, and nitrogen. Three of the elements are already gases, and if you combine carbon with oxygen, you could literally vaporize 95 kilograms of a 100-kilogram man. The rest would be mostly calcium and phosphorus. An arm would be,
Kemp looked into space as he did the calculations.
5% of total body weight, of which 5% is non-CHON. Ivan weighs about 75 kilograms, so we're looking at less than 200 grams of non-gaseous waste.
Kemp moved to the intercom and pressed a button.
"Astra, please check environmental logs for this deck. Any unusual issues with the air recently?"
"Affirmative. Slightly higher levels of carbon monoxide, water vapor, and nitrogen had to be fractioned out over the last 24 hours. Lower levels of oxygen required replenishment."
Kemp raised an eyebrow and turned to the others.
"Interesting. A nice detective work, Dr. Kemp," Chief McNeil said. "Now, about the other half of my question."
"Yeah, not my department, Chief. My next step would be to examine the amputated limb. There might be a clue there."
McNeil nodded.
Mind if I tag along?
Not at all. Kemp turned to the captain. We're still gathering facts, sir, but the bottom line is that this thing seems to be progressive. Where it'll stop is unknown. It might already be done. It might keep going until Ivan is gone.
And we have no idea what it wants,
McNeil added. Very well. Keep me in the loop. The captain nodded to the two, then turned and left. Kemp turned to head up the corridor. Now, let's see about that limb. Kemp slid the retractable tray out of the compartment. On the stainless steel tray was a metal case with multiple latches along one side.
You kept it in the morgue? Makes sense, I guess.
McNeil helped Kemp move the case to an autopsy table. It was a matter of moments to snap open the latches and open it. McNeil took one look and recoiled.
Oh, wow.
Kemp stood frozen, staring at the contents. A ragged cylinder of flesh cut cleanly on one end and seemingly dissolved to a conical stump at the other. A length of bone stuck out of the dissolved end.
What the... This is nothing but the biological part of the amputation. We cut about 3 inches above the interface. Where's the metal?
McNeil stared at the case for a few moments, then pulled a flashlight out of his pocket. Walking to the door, he flicked the lights off in the room. He returned to the case and started playing the light around.
Watch the outside of the case.
Kemp craned his neck to take a closer look, then...
There, at the corner.
A number of holes, perhaps a millimeter in diameter, allowed stray beams of light to shine through. They looked at each other, then moved to the refrigerated compartment. McNeil shone the light, then pointed. Kemp saw what looked like a similar series of pinholes in a corner. McNeil gazed into the compartment for a few moments, then turned to look at the sample container. He leaned far into the compartment and stared intently at the corner, illuminating it with the flashlight. He then backed away from the compartment, still staring in the same direction. Kemp watched this performance silently, not wanting to interrupt whatever calculations were going on.
Both sets of holes line up with the shortest path back to Ivan,
McNeil said,
which means the wee beast is drilled straight through the ship. I'll have to check the intervening spaces for critical wiring or such.
He turned off his flashlight.
Which doesn't definitively answer a question of where the metal is coming from. But the fact they can eat through a sample case like that gives us a possible answer that I didn't like at all.
Kemp noted in passing that McNeil's accent got stronger in stressful situations. He thought about what the chief had said.
Cannibalizing the ship to rebuild Ivan's arm.
Mm-hmm.
They turned the room lights back on and sat down. McNeil looked up at the ceiling for a few moments, rubbing his chin.
The question is, why would they go back to Pritchett in particular? Especially once the nanites were no longer associated with him.
Ugh. Kemp rubbed his forehead. Unless they're in more than just his arm. There was nothing in the blood sample I took during the initial exam, but that was before he started to metallize.
Right. Time to take another one.
They got up, and Kemp led the way back to sick bay.
And there it is,
Dr. Kemp gestured to the microscope. McNeil leaned in and looked through the eyepieces.
Oh, dear. Those are
nanites. Same as the ones that are replacing his cells.
So they have taken up residence in our Mr. Pritchett.
McNeil stepped back and glared at the microscope.
Which at least explains the homing behavior. Now, as for the other part of the question.
They're eating the ship? Captain Jennings, for the first time since Kemp had known him, looked unabashedly afraid.
Not the whole ship, Captain,
McNeil explained quickly.
They seem to be stripping layers from structures to supply the material for Pritchard's new parts.
And these things are in his bloodstream?
Kemp nodded.
We did tests on ourselves and found nothing. That's not definitive, though. I found nothing initially out of the ordinary in Pritchard's blood sample either, but it would explain why they're obsessed with getting back to him. He has been, for better or worse, chosen in some way.
I'm going to order blood tests for everyone, Captain Jennings said. Negative results may not be definitive, but a positive result would be. We need to know.
Kemp nodded.
I'll get the sick bay ready.
A lineup wound along the corridor from the sick bay. Dr. Kemp was quick and efficient, and anyway, no one really wanted to engage in chit-chat. At 2 minutes per person, the crew was soon back in the common room, doubtlessly spinning ever wilder theories. Ivan was still out. Kemp couldn't believe that so much had happened since the man had been infected. Kemp sighed quietly and walked over to look down at him. Poor sap. The infection, or whatever it was, seemed to be going to great lengths to avoid harming him, or even causing him any discomfort. A good sign, certainly. But even if this turned out to be ultimately benign, he was going through hell. In addition to his own health, he had to be worried about how his family would be affected. Although the strike at Big Rock would help with... Dr. Kemp felt behind himself for the intercom button. Without turning it, he pressed.
Astra, page the captain, please. Tell him Ivan's other limbs have started to metallize.
16. We'll handle it. The captain ended the call with a barely audible groan of frustration. Well, the good news was that no one else seemed to be infected. The bad news was that Ivan Pritchard continued to be converted, to metallize, as Dr. Kemp put it. And Chief McNeil had confirmed the worst. The nanites were moving freely about the ship, harvesting metal and returning it to Pritchard's body to build his replacement parts. No critical systems had been affected. In fact, according to the chief, the nanites appeared to be spreading their depredations around in order to avoid adversely affecting any equipment. Nevertheless, the potential downside was without limit. In theory, once finished with Pritchard, the nanites could start on the rest of the crew. In theory, if the Mad Astra returned to Earth, they could release this scourge on the human race. Gray goo apocalypse indeed. This was no longer a containable situation. The captain reached for the intercom. A lot of preparation would be required.
What is the status of the claim, Ms. Janaris?
Janaris pursed her lips for a moment.
Everything is textbook, sir. We've forwarded all data to the auction house. Bids are coming in from the conglomerates. Closing date is 3 days away. Just the reserve price will make a single share owner a half-billionaire.
At what point is the deal irrevocable?
Well, the bid winner will send a survey ship to verify our data. If that turned out to be significantly incorrect, they could pull out, but I'm confident of Cyrilla's numbers, sir. If anything, she's been slightly conservative, so I don't see that happening.
Jennings nodded.
I agree, Ms. Janaris. I'm more concerned about the buyer becoming spooked if this business with Ivan Pritchard goes public.
But we've been careful to separate the two events, both chronologically and spatially.
And done a good job, I believe. Nevertheless, is there a way for us to get screwed?
Honestly, sir, if the military got involved and suspected a connection between the claim and the Pritchard event, then they could conceivably attempt to interdict the Big Rock. But first, they have to make that connection. And even then, there's hundreds of billions of dollars at stake, and I'd think the bid winner would go to court to fight it, rather than meekly backing off.
That is my analysis as well. Thank you.
It was a dismissal. Lita hesitated for a moment, then got up and left the captain's ready room. Jennings paused to review the chain of events and consider their options. What he was about to propose would take them further down the rabbit hole into possible illegality. he would have to present his proposal delicately. Before hesitation could become paralysis, he stabbed the call button for the doctor.
Captain?
Doctor, I wonder if it would be feasible, without breaking your oath, to delay reporting Mr. Pritchard's condition, say, 3 days?
3 days, Captain?
Kemp sounded concerned. Spooked, really.
Will we be breaking any laws? Contravening any policies?
Well, no, sir. I guess if we were military... As it is, there may be questions about why we took so long to report the event, but it's not unreasonable for us to try to handle it ourselves, at least for a while. Why 3 days, specifically, if I may ask?
In 3 days, bidding closes on Big Rock. After that point, the bid winner is personally, if that's the right word, invested.
Jennings smiled for a fraction of a second at the attempted witticism.
Considering the life-altering nature of our claim, I think it's a reasonable consideration.
I can't really disagree, Captain. Honestly, I think Ivan would agree as well.
And what is the situation with Mr. Pritchard?
I resedated him. I can't do that again without risking medical complications. Of course, by that point, it may not matter. The metallization is accelerating. The interface is now proximal relative to the knees and elbow on the three remaining limbs.
Which in English means it's up to his thighs and upper arm. Will the conversion continue into the torso?
Dr. Kemp was silent for a moment before replying.
I don't know. Metallization along the right arm appears to have halted at the shoulder, but I don't know if it's just waiting for the other limbs to catch up. There's definitely intelligence involved. Although whether it's sentient or just AI is impossible to say.
And still no idea what the end game is?
No, sir.
What about isolating him? Is there anything we can do?
We don't have any facilities for that. We can confine him to his room, of course, and that's probably a good idea just for crew morale, but ultimately it's a gesture more than a real precaution. The nanites are already out. And they're demonstrably not impeded by walls.
Understood. It goes without saying that we cannot expect a return to Earth until this is resolved. Please prepare a full report for transmission to the ICDC. Try to minimize reference to the timeline, but don't prevaricate. We don't mind being portrayed as unwise, but we can't afford any slightest whiff of criminality.
Yes, sir.
Very well then, Doctor. Keep me up to date on status. Thank you.
17. Continuing infection. Ivan awoke with no transition. One moment, blank. The next, full awareness. That was unusual at any time unless an alarm clock was involved. He liked to take several minutes to segue from dreams to wakefulness. In this case, he was coming out of sedation. He remembered being put under after panicking about his arm. His arm! Ivan sat up without warning, almost knocking Dr. Kemp over. The doctor had apparently been reaching for his face or something and came that close to getting clocked in the nose by Ivan's forehead. He lifted his right arm. Metal. His eyes followed the arm up to his shoulder. Metal. As far as he could see, even the shoulder. He turned to Dr. Kemp, tears forming in his eyes. Then he saw his legs. And his left arm. A whimper escaped his throat, and the world contracted to a bright point. Ivan awoke again, and remembered. He looked at his feet, at his hands. Metal. Dr. Kemp sat at the side of the bed looking sympathetic. Ivan looked him in the eyes and said, "How bad is it?" Dr. Kemp looked down for a moment. "Ivan, it's not bad like cancer or a degenerative disease. You aren't, as far as we can tell, dying or even unhealthy. You're just turning into Iron Man?"
Ivan laughed, but even he could hear the note of hysteria. Dr. Kemp's face fell. Ivan felt bad for him for a moment.
Ivan, the conversion is continuing. At the moment, the only parts of you that are still flesh and blood are your head and torso.
Ivan looked down. Dr. Kemp flashed a smile.
Everything is still there. Whether functionality is maintained or not, well, you can test that at your leisure.
Okay, what about bodily functions?
This is the truly interesting thing about this whole process. Dr. Kemp gave Ivan a sideways glance, as if gauging his reaction to the comment. It's not just blindly working its way up your body. It appears to maintain biological systems as long as necessary until a metal version is ready to take over the function. Blood supply is always appropriate to the remaining biological systems. Hormonal levels are maintained, and so on.
Ivan stared at him for several seconds.
This isn't going to stop, is it?
Dr. Kemp's only answer was a sigh.
But what is it?
The doctor waved a hand and made fish motions with his mouth for a few moments. Then he shrugged and gave Ivan a rueful smile.
I wish I knew. We know the basic facts, Ivan. Your cells are being replaced by microscopic nanites. The nanites are harvesting metal from the ship to make more nanites.
Kemp looked up at the ceiling for a moment, perhaps gathering his thoughts.
There are a few things I find encouraging. First, the nanites are careful not to take too much metal from one spot. The chief tells me that nothing is getting eaten down enough to affect functionality or structural soundness. And likewise, none of the changes being made to you seems to be harmful beyond the obvious issue of consent. It seems to be taking care to not cause you harm or even discomfort. None of those things could happen by coincidence. It requires a concerted, conscious effort.
Conscious?
Dr. Kemp shook his head.
Don't read anything into that. I don't have any inside information. I meant conscious as in a deliberate, targeted set of results.
Ivan nodded, thinking about it.
Yeah. An AI could do something like that according to its instructions. That really seems more likely, just in general.
He leaned back and started to rub his forehead, then jerked his hand away and stared at it. The action had felt entirely normal to his fingertips, but on his forehead, it had felt like being massaged by a metallic implement.
If this was happening to someone else, I'd be fascinated. As it is, I'm still curious, but also terrified. The process could be completely benign, but at the end of it, I'll still be gone.
Perhaps. Or maybe not. We don't know the limits of this thing. I know it's easy for me to say, but there's only one way to find out.
Not that I have a choice.
Ivan sighed and closed his eyes.
I'm pretty tired, Doc. Can we continue this later?
The stool's casters made a rolling sound as Dr. Kemp stood.
No problem, Ivan. I'd like to do some tests when you're rested.
Ivan barely heard the sound of the door closing.
And squeeze again?
Ivan squeezed the bulb as instructed, while Dr. Kemp watched the pressure gauge. Dr. Kemp had asked him to undergo a physical, and Ivan figured it might distract him. The doctor had that skill that physicians seemed to cultivate everywhere, the same non-committal mm-hmm on each test that gave no indication of whether he'd aced it or was about to die. Finally, the doctor looked up from his tablet.
It's interesting. Your strength is considerably increased. I'm lucky you didn't actually break a couple of my devices. You redlined a couple of measurements. Reflexes are faster, but not inhumanly so. I think that's going to continue to improve as the, transformation continues.
It's okay, Doc. I get it. I'm not happy, of course, but I'm probably not going to die. I actually feel pretty good, physically.
Ivan held up his arm and flexed it.
I used to have twinges with my elbow sometimes, old football injury. It's completely gone, so there's some upside, I guess.
Kemp turned and picked up a blood collection kit.
I can't take this from the usual locations, obviously. I'll try to be gentle.
The doctor swabbed Ivan's pectoral muscle, then held up the needle.
Ready?
Ivan nodded, and the doctor collected a blood sample. It hurt like a son of a bitch, but Ivan found himself not minding. It might be one of the last human sensations he would ever experience. Finally finished, the doctor sat back and crossed his legs.
So how do you feel otherwise, Ivan? Any other symptoms? Issues? Concerns?
Like I said, I feel great, physically. Ivan looked at the ceiling for a moment.
What I'm really worried about...
He took a moment to get his voice under control.
What I'm really worried about is whether I'll still be there when the process is complete. Will it be me? Or will there be an alien something looking out of my eyes? Will it remember being me? Will it even care?
Ivan squeezed his eyes, then looked at the doctor.
Am I ever going to see my family again? Is there any version of this where I end up going home?
Dr. Kemp was silent for several seconds.
I wish I had an answer for you, Ivan. We're all out of our depth here.
The doctor took a marking pen from a drawer.
If you don't mind, Ivan, I want to track the conversion.
At Ivan's nod, Kemp made a series of regularly spaced marks on Ivan's torso, starting from the point where metal met flesh. He then added numbers, starting from zero.
That's exactly the kind of obsessive attention to detail that I can appreciate, Doc. I just wish it wasn't me being measured. Look, Ivan, we're all equally in the dark, but based on what I said yesterday, I don't think this is an attack of some kind. Maybe it's an attempt to communicate. I think it's a fair bet that whatever engineered this isn't human, so we can't safely assume human motivations, but we can expect consistency.
Dr. Kemp tapped the palm of his hand with the marker while he considered.
If it's taking care not to cause undue harm, I can't see it suddenly changing course and becoming like a movie monster.
Unless it didn't want me to be spaced before the conversion was complete.
Okay, granted. But then the best strategy would be to go after everyone at once, and to disable the ship quickly. However alien the intelligence behind this is, we still should expect it to act in a sane, consistent manner.
You've decided it's alien? Ivan cocked his head and smiled slightly.
Haven't you?
Yeah. I guess that's where I'd put my money.
18. Strategy Meeting.
Dr. Kemp looked around the table. All the ship's bridge staff were present. Several muttered conversations provided a low susurrus of sound, barely above the level of the air system. Captain Jennings slowly stirred his coffee, gathering his thoughts before he looked up.
Record this meeting, please, Astra. For the record, present are myself, Andrew Jennings, captain of the Mad Astra, First Mate Dante Aiello, Pilot Albert Mikorowski, Co-Pilot and Purser Lita Generis, Charles Kemp, Ship's Doctor, and Duncan McNeil, Chief Engineer. The purpose of this meeting is to discuss the unexplained transmutation of crewman Ivan Pritchard into a being made of metal.
The captain looked around the table. No one spoke. He gestured to Kemp.
Please start the ball rolling, Doctor.
Kemp played with the documents on his tablet, unexpectedly nervous. This meeting would go on the record. Every word, every document, every hesitation might end up being analyzed for years by... He wasn't really sure by whom.
During an exploration of a small asteroid where a density anomaly had been detected, Pritchard was exposed to an unknown substance which coated his suit arm. The crew removed the suit arm and got Pritchard into the airlock. There was no obvious indication that the substance had penetrated the suit, and a medical examination of Pritchard revealed nothing unexpected.
Kemp paused to flip the document on his tablet.
He had made notes to keep his narrative focused more than anything else. He knew he would have a tendency to wander into conjecture otherwise.
The next morning, the subject woke up with his arm partly converted to metal. The retelling was almost hypnotic, and Kemp found himself having to avoid going into a sing-song tone of voice as he continued. His report stuck to observations and facts. No analysis, no theorizing. Finally, he was done, and he looked to the captain. Jennings turned to Chief McNeil.
"Technical analysis, Chief?"
McNeil leaned forward, enthusiasm written plainly on his face.
"The metal composition of the subject's new limbs is not continuous. Rather, it is composed of a number of what we are calling nanites, individual machines somewhat smaller than a human cell. They are not identical, instead consisting of non-periodic shapes consistent with Penrose tiles, but a three-dimensional version. They link together, forming what could be described as a mesh. Flexible, but extremely strong. And self-healing. Attempts to scrape off a sample have been frustrating, even if ultimately successful. The units flow around the tool and reform behind it. We finally had to rig up something that would bite off a chunk and sequester it.
There is no apparent central control unit or any indication of conscious intelligence. Despite this, the infectious agent seems to behave in an intelligent, coordinated manner.
McNeil jerked, seemingly realizing that he was straying into speculation and stepping on Kemp's turf. He looked over at the doctor before continuing.
The substance that was separated from the subject during the initial amputation had made its way through the ship and very close to a beeline back to the subject. It apparently avoided critical systems and components which would indicate an understanding of our ship's design, at least on a general level.
Now came the less honest part. Kemp knew that McNeil wasn't happy with this plan. None of them was.
We placed a beacon on the asteroid where the anomaly was found. Identification number is in the notes.
It was a lie of omission. Kemp doubted they'd have been able to persuade McNeil to lie outright on the record, but not mentioning the part where they moved the asteroid, or the part where they waited almost a week before activating the beacon, was apparently at least tolerable. Captain Jennings looked to Kemp again.
"What is the status of the subject, Doctor?"
"He is now metallized up to mid-chest. Only above that line is he still human. The process shows no signs of stopping. The metallized body is still providing blood to his head, proper levels of hormones, oxygen, glycogen, and so on, and is cleaning the blood of toxins and waste in a manner indistinguishable from a normal body. I consider it a positive that the infection is putting so much effort into keeping the subject alive."
"Prognosis?"
Kemp shook his head.
"It would be rank speculation, Captain. We don't know if the process will continue, although it looks like it at the moment. We don't know if Ivan Pritchard will continue to exist as an individual once the process is complete. The subject is understandably concerned about that question himself. It's not unlike facing the possibility of imminent death. I've seen the same reactions from people about to undergo dangerous surgery, that they might not survive. Imagine going under with the fear that you might simply never wake up."
"Any sign of infection in any other crew, Doctor?"
"None. The infection seems to be completely focused on Ivan. No nanites have been detected in other crew, and to the extent that Mr. McNeil and I have been able to determine, they aren't wandering about on the loose, other than for the scavenging."
Captain Jennings nodded, then spoke into the air.
"Under the circumstances, we can't risk returning directly to Earth or to any public terminus. We are therefore requesting that the ICDC set up some form of isolation while the ship and crew are examined for continued infection and while the situation is evaluated for long-term dangers."
The captain sighed, then pressed a button on his chair.
"End of report. Astra, please bundle up all pertinent records and forward them to the ICDC.
He looked around the table.
And may God have mercy on our souls.
19. Writing home.
Dear Judy, please keep this away from the kids. Something has happened. I can't go into much detail because, honestly, I'm not sure of the details myself, but the bottom line is, I'm sick. I seem to have caught something on one of the rocks we were prospecting. No one is sure what it is, but we're worried about it spreading, so the captain has contacted the ICDC and will be quarantined. I'm not dying, I don't think. That's the good news. And the strike's been confirmed, the money's been paid, and we're now wealthy beyond our wildest dreams. As soon as escrow clears, that's pretty good too. But I may be contagious. And I may continue to be contagious. They just don't know enough yet. Judy, I love you so much, and I want to return to you and spend the rest of our lives spending our money in frivolous ways. But if worst comes to worst and this doesn't work out, I'm glad that I'll have managed to make your futures so much better. I'll keep you up to date. I'll call as soon as we're close enough for real time. Please try not to worry. Love, Ivan.
Ivan hesitated for several seconds, staring at what he'd typed. How could he tell her that he might not even exist in a few more days? How could he explain that even if he did, he might never be allowed to leave? Not yet. He owed it to her to let her know something was wrong, but the rest? He'd have to think on it. With an angry jab, he pressed send. He wanted so much just to go home, to hold Judy in his arms. He wanted the family dog piles on the ratty old couch, and mostly, he just wanted to touch them one more time. It wasn't going to happen. Ivan looked at his hands. Chrome, all the way up. There was no cure for this, and it probably wasn't going to stop. He was dead, for all practical purposes. He poked the interface on his chest, the point where flesh met metal. The difference in texture was obvious. From the inside, it felt no different. He could feel his fingers poking the chrome part of his chest. The sensation was neither more nor less sensitive or odd in any way. Even his fingers seemed to have the same sense of touch, but from the outside. Ivan stared at his fingers for several seconds more, then slowly moved the keyboard and put his head down on the desk. His shoulders shook, then his hands. Within seconds he was sobbing, his cheeks pulled back in a rictus of emotional overload. Between ragged breaths, he kept repeating,
"Oh God, Judy, I love you. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry."
Eventually, wrung out, he threw himself on his bunk and was unconscious within seconds. 20. ICDC.
Dr. Madhur Narayan looked up from the file.
"Is this a joke?"
She noted in passing that the slight lilt in her voice from her New Delhi origins had become more pronounced. That happened when she became excited, which made her a truly awful poker player.
"I wish it was."
Dr. Karan Lakonen, ICDC director and Narang's immediate boss, waved a hand toward the folder.
"We received this yesterday, and we verified the source. It's a Class 4 Chrysler Morrison mining ship, the Mad Astra, returning early from a tour of the belt. They have recently registered a large strike, so are not motivated to casually create any kind of controversy. I've had some people look at the supporting documentation, and it's not obviously faked. What are we planning to do?" "Well, we do have plans in place for isolating incoming spaceships. That's the word interplanetary at the beginning of our name. I've asked the isolation systems people to have something ready, and we've sent orders to the Astra to proceed to the specified coordinates.
Lakanen poked at her tablet.
Which brings us to this meeting, Mador. I'm putting you in charge of the case. Benton is more senior than you, but she's somewhat unimaginative and by the book. I don't think that's optimal for this particular situation.
Narang grinned at her boss, silently agreeing. Dr. Sidney Benton was a knowledgeable doctor and an excellent technician, but far too inclined to retreat into standard procedures when things went off the rails. Her tablet beeped and Dr. Narang looked down to see the file that her boss had just sent. She quickly flipped through it. Travel itinerary, authorizations, contacts. Narang smiled. She was going into space. Dr. Lakanen chuckled, correctly guessing the reason for Narang's expression.
This is your first time, isn't it? I've had all the courses, of course, but I've never been up higher than suborbital.
Lakanen was silent for several seconds, and took on a serious expression.
Maddie, this smells. We both know it. If we take the report at face value, you know what it implies, right? First contact.
Lakanen nodded.
With all the social and political upheaval that implies. Even without the Grey Goo or Space Invaders narratives, tread carefully. Be very careful with what you say. We don't want to start a panic.
Narang had a feeling that some level of public panic was inevitable.
We'll have to keep a very tight lid on this one, while not appearing to be doing so, and something will get out eventually anyway. That's my responsibility, Maddie. You just worry about the actual incident.
Lakanen stood and stuck out her hand.
Good luck, Dr. Narang. Here's hoping this turns out to be overblown.
6 hours later, Dr. Narang was on Olympus Station, seated in a public lounge. She watched the crowds file past in both directions as she waited for her Navy contact to make an appearance. Meanwhile, the bench was comfortable, she was early, and she was in space. Olympus Station, the hub of the solar system. Very possibly the most important place in the solar system. From here, ships headed to the research stations at Mercury's poles, to the orbiting platforms around Venus, the lunar and Martian colonies, the belt, even the Titan and Ganymede outposts. The shuttle trip had been an experience, though. Narang decided she'd prefer to stay space-side or ground-side as long as possible. Commuting would be several layers of hell, although one might get used to it eventually. The people walking by seemed an even mix of military, civilian professionals of one kind or another on some personal mission, and just plain tourists. Narang found herself mildly surprised that there were still people with enough wealth to consider a trip into space as nothing more than a vacation getaway, like going to Miami back when there was a Florida. Her phone buzzed and Narang looked at the screen. Her meetup app was registering the presence of her designated contact. She stood and turned away from the crowds and spotted the uniformed man approaching.
He's just a baby.
The officer looked like a poster boy for recruitment ads. Emphasis on boy. When had she gotten old enough to think of people that way? The window behind him displayed a slowly rotating panorama of stars, with a bright three-quarter moon glowing in the background. A studio director would have swooned over the setup. Immaculately pressed uniform, short, wavy chestnut hair, and a good, strong chin completed the picture. She could almost believe his image had been digitally cleaned up, except this was live. Unaware of the internal drama he was generating, he stuck out his hand.
Dr. Madhur Narang?
She took the hand.
That's me. Presumably you're my contact.
Lieutenant George Bentley, at your service.
He gave her a natural, friendly smile. That was encouraging, at least.
Thank the universe he didn't appear to be either a by-the-book rigid military type or a preening, self-absorbed pretty boy. She had a bad tendency to needle people who were too full of themselves. They wove their way through the crowd.